The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
And now part three of our four-part special with Palestinian-American, human rights major, and former Miss Arab USA, Suzanne Osland. This is the Black Information Network Daily Podcast, and I'm your host, Ramses Jha.
For those just tuning in, we are having a conversation with Suzanne Osland, a friend of the show. I hope a personal friend as well now. Thank you for being my first Palestinian friend.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's an honor.
She is a human rights major, a former Miss Arab USA, an actress as well as an activist turned writer. And she's naturally a Palestinian-American woman. She spent time in Palestine working with a peacekeeping team and has a deep personal understanding of the occupation. She has family on the ground in Palestine. And I do want you to follow her social media. She is at the Actorvist. The last part of the show, we were talking about Joe Biden. Really, Joe Biden talking out of both sides of his mouth at the State of the Union address, right? He's funding the genocide that he now is condemning Israel for, right? Mm-hmm. And prior to that, we were talking about how the narrative has shifted in favor of the Palestinians away from the Israeli government. There was one part that we did not get to. And there's a couple of other things that I want to talk about, things that have developed since our last conversation. The two-state solution that Biden suggested was the only path forward. I'll be honest. I've heard two-state solution.
Yeah.
I don't know what it means. I think I know what it means.
Sure.
I know what it sounds like it means, right? But I don't know what it means. And I don't know if that's really what, in your opinion, is the long-term solution here. If it is the long-term solution, does Joe Biden get half a point for saying that, quote, you know, two-state solution thing in a State of the Union address? I'm not a Joe Biden fan, by the way, but,
right,
you know, this is the part of the journalism that we have to ask these questions. And before you answer, I want you to know that I'm well aware of and indeed applaud the efforts of the Arab community, the Middle Eastern community on the ground in Detroit, letting their voices be heard by the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
I vote Democrat in every election, but that doesn't mean that Democrats do right by Black people. And I think that Black people could learn from what the Middle Eastern population in Detroit did by voting
uncommitted.
Mm-hmm. None of these candidates, whatever it was. I think uncommitted sounds better. It was a small tremor, but it was enough to, I believe, affect Joe Biden's
It made State him angry.
Yeah. His State of the Union address. Yeah. And indeed put forth something that felt very strong in him saying the only long-term solution. Actually, let me not misquote him. The only real solution is a two-state solution. That's a direct quote from Joe Biden during his State of the Union address. So, two-state solution.
Mm-hmm.
Go.
I don't know how that would work. Mm-hmm. I go back and forth on one state or two state, and Palestinians go back and forth on one state, and that's our internal debate mm-hmm. that we are allowed to have.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Not all Palestinians are on the same page about every single policy, you know, just like any group of people. The two-state solution is highly impossible in my mind if you think about the way that the country of Palestine looks. So
yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah. So first of all, we technically would be getting Gaza and the West Bank, right? Okay. They're not connected.
Yeah.
So that's weird. And but they're West very Bank. Close. But then you have this whole strip of Israel in the middle of it. Within the West Bank, according to the 1967 border lines that were created after the Six-Day War, we were supposed to just get the West Bank. That didn't happen. Israel illegally moved settlers into the West Bank. So they have Israeli settlers in these like really gorgeous settlements that they've built. Sometimes they just kick people out of their own homes, but sometimes they actually will take land and then build these communities that are, they're Jewish only, they're segregated, it's complete apartheid. And it's actually really interesting. On a separate note, you can actually say that even though Palestinians are the ones experiencing apartheid, Israelis experience segregation because they're segregated from the Palestinian population. They don't get to interact with the Palestinian population. There are signs in Arabic, English, and Hebrew warning the Israeli settlers not to come into our towns because it's dangerous, quote unquote. Even though they're the ones with the weapons, and the Israeli settlers will come into our towns and do whatever they want and bully and harass. And I've watched them, Ramses, with my own eyes, harass school children trying to get to school in the morning. Adult Israeli settlers, I've watched them attack school children trying to get from one town to another, one village to another, where their little school is. And yet we're the ones that are dangerous. And they're trying to keep their population away from us.
Okay.
So if they're building these permanent settlement structures, how does the West Bank become ours? What becomes Palestine if you've already brought 500,000 people into this tiny, tiny little piece of land and kept them there permanently? How do we get it? Do they become Palestinians? That's not going to happen. They're Israeli citizens and they want to be Israeli citizens. They don't want to be Palestinians. They would have to leave. And the idea of them leaving and trying to deal with that just seems so unrealistic. So then you go, okay, one state solution. That sounds fair, right? Like we all live harmoniously together. The South Africans did it. Sure. It is really unlikely to see that, to see a world where Israeli politicians are willing to communicate on an equal playing field with Palestinian politicians.
Yeah, that's
where, because currently there are Palestinians living inside of Israel. Okay. So we call them 48. They're from 1948. Oh. They're Palestinians who never left that part of Palestine and got integrated into the Israeli population. They, even though they have Israeli citizenship, they are still treated by officials and by oftentimes many citizens, not all citizens, but many citizens as second class citizens. So there's really not a world inside of Palestine where Palestinians feel like they would ever be equal to Israelis. So I don't know how this works when you're arguing one state, two state. There's pros and cons to both, depending on how far we are willing to go.
Okay. So how about this? How do I say this? There's a person who's an activist. His name is Sean King.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of him.
Familiar with
mm-hmm.
Yes. He said something that rattled me.
Okay.
Sean King is an activist across the board, but during this time, he says, you know, Joe Biden needs to step up, condemn this action, blah, 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 whatever. And Joe Biden did not do that.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not at that time. And then more videos came out. And Sean King was the one sharing these videos when he was still on Instagram. Then he said something after some time of calling for the president of the United States to condemn this activity. He says, you know what? I will never cast a vote for this man as long as I live.
Right.
I cannot do it in good conscience. Mm-hmm. And that rattled me because the alternative is really, really, really bad. Right. But I understand.
Oh, yeah.
Why he said that. And I don't like it, but I love it.
Yeah.
Right. Like when I'm talking about the Arab American community right. in Detroit. I don't like that, but I love it. And I hope that you listening to me, I hope you get what I'm trying to say.
Because there's not a proper alternative.
Right. But I love the fact that it's like, well, look, none of these work. So we're doing none of these.
Right.
So that part, I'm with it. Right. And, you know, and also I try to be fair. You know, I'm not just on this show, not just on Civic Cypher, not just, you know, when I have a microphone and an audience, I try to be fair in my regular life. I think that that's the right way to be. I know what it is. And so I just do the thing that is right. I try to, you know what I mean? Maybe I don't know, but in my heart, it's right. Right. So I'm not going to steal. I'm not going to bear false witness. We're going to cite the Ten Commandments, right? I'm not going to do these things. Granted, there's some nuance. There's some things right there, but I follow my heart. I try to do what's right. In other words, I don't believe that I'm a bad person. So when I try to be fair, I will call it a spade, too little, too late, but it's not nothing. You've heard me say that before right. on this show, right? So when Joe Biden says with his whole chest, the only, hang on, let me not misquote him, the only real solution is a two-state solution.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that suggests, again, I'm not a fan of Joe Biden, but credit where it's due, if indeed there's credit here, and you're the person who can tell me better than I can tell myself with respect to this, because if I want to say Palestinian people on the ground are my brothers and sisters, I have to let you say it first, right? But I'm going to say this because this is the way that I've interpreted these words, okay? If he says the only real solution is a two-state solution, to me, that suggests he is conceiving of and indeed sharing with the world the concept of a future of Palestinians. So right there, that means we do not wish to see Palestinians eliminated from planet Earth. That's not nothing, because Hitler was really awesome. Like, we want to see the Jews eliminated from planet Earth, right? Now, I'm not clapping for Hitler. I'm not clapping for Joe Biden. But he did say that in the State of the Union. It wasn't on a microphone. He wasn't getting interviewed. He was stated, he prepared. He knew he was going to say that. And I believe that that has to, on some level, fly in the face of what I believe a lot of pro-Israeli folks feel, which is, the world would be better off without a state of Palestine. This all belongs to Israel, or the world would be better off without Palestinian people, right? Now, again, that's not nothing. That is no way would ever be a defense of Joe Biden. But the reason I frame it that way is when it's not nothing, and Black people, and I'm not speaking for all Black people, but I know that this is true. Black people, we're very, very used to taking very, very tiny baby steps forward, right? And we will put forth something that says, hey, we want all of this, and we'll end up with 10% of it. And that's not zero, and we'll take the 10%, and we revisit the fight in 5 years or 10 years or in another two decades, right? And so this incremental progress that's very slow and very disheartening for a lot of people who wished to get more, when you take a step back and you look at the entirety of the progress of Black people in this country, you're able to see, oh, this does not work in the scale of a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
This is not, I'm not going to live in the world that I want to live in.
Sure.
My grandchildren might live in that world.
Sure.
And it breaks my heart. Because I have actual children that won't get to live in that world either, right? But as a result of me acknowledging that truth, I recognize that when it's not nothing, that means it's something. And so I suppose my question is, does it matter? And if the answer is no, the answer is no. Again, you're the person here to tell me what the truth is, right? But does it matter that Joe Biden has said at least that one part out loud with his whole chest in front of the world?
No.
Okay.
It doesn't. Who cares what he says? If he sends $10 million a day to dismantle Palestine, who cares? They're just words. Put your money where your mouth is, Genocide Joe. They say these things, and you see it in every presidential cycle. They say the things that sound really good to get elected. And also, we've been talking about a two-state solution for a few decades now.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, this isn't new. This has been the argument back and forth. Meanwhile, while we're having this debate, Israel is confiscating more and more Palestinian land in the West Bank.
This part I know.
Yeah. And so we sit there and have this conversation. We can go to the State of the Union and clap for his two-state solution. But then they're still taking more land. So it's going to be impossible to actually achieve. But it's really nice because you said it and you thought it. So, you know, you were well-intentioned. I mean, you weren't because you funded that.
Okay.
But we've been talking about this for a really long time. Clinton was trying really hard to get this through. This isn't anything new, but it's so difficult to even talk about that because we have to end the occupation first.
Okay, so put a pin in the occupation because I want to talk about that. Solutions.
Mm.
You and I are very good at enumerating problems.
Sure.
And I think we're just as good at discussing solutions, but often enough, the clock runs out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So here's what I want to do. I want to talk about solution.
Okay.
Okay. First thing I'm going to say is I would like for you at some point in your response to discuss, you can make a note of it. This is going to be a two-parter.
Okay, here we go.
I would like for you to discuss what a solution looks like in the occupation. Well, you know, maybe,
oh,
you know, it's okay. Just so people can conceive of it.
Sure.
Because we're all trying to figure this out.
Yeah.
But for the individuals, those of us listening to these episodes that you and I are recording, you know, you're an actor, you're more informed about this than 99.99999% of the people on Earth. Right. You have more information than probably even a higher number than that. Right. So this is a moment for us to look to you to conceive of what a future might look like. Now, obviously, there's a political outcome. And, you know, you mentioned in the occupation that might be part of the solution.
Yeah.
But what can we do on the ground? And I want to start that by saying, there was a video. We're bringing folks up to speed on developments since you and I last spoke about this. There was a video that came out. There was a young man in the video. His name was Aaron Bushnell.
Mm.
Okay. And in the video, he was talking about how he's a U.S. soldier. And I won't play the video again. He has done his protest. He has sacrificed for what he believed was right. And if you feel that watching that will bring you the clarity and the clarification that you need, because I'm not articulating his words the right way, feel free. But I want to celebrate his protest. Mm. I want to celebrate his life, but the video is of his death. And that is
that he recorded.
Mm-hmm, he recorded it, right? So in his last moments on earth, he was very hurt by what was happening in Palestine. And because I think it matters, he is a white man.
Yeah. Young man, 25.
Okay. Yeah. So, and he's walking in front of the Israeli embassy and he's discussing his inevitable act of protest against the state of Israel and against the United States and the treatment of the Palestinian people on the ground in Palestine, in Gaza. And he says, the sacrifice that I'm going to make today pales in comparison to what it is that they're dealing with. But my hope is that this will bring attention to something like this. It wasn't quite as poetic as, you and I mentioned Palestinian, his words about Jewish people beautifying the land. But it was the spirit and the thoughtfulness.
He said, I will not be complicit in genocide.
There you go. And it just was a gut punch. It had to be a gut punch for anybody who values human life and thinks that it's special and recognizes that it's a one in a trillions possibility that this one individual could exist at this one point in time. And he decided to sacrifice that magic to bring attention to something that he felt was wrong. Okay. He walks in front of the embassy, the Israeli embassy. He pours a liquid on himself, sets himself on fire, his camera's still rolling, and his last words were,
"Free Palestine."
Free Palestine. Okay. Now, when you see that and you realize, like I did over the course of however many months, that hey, these body parts that they're pulling out of this rubble, they look like they could fit on my son's body.
Yeah.
That, what if this was me? I realized that. I don't mean to be graphic, but there was a person holding a leg trying to find the body of the baby it belonged to so that they could give the baby a proper bear, the baby that didn't get a chance to grow up. Let me tell you something, if you're listening right now. My son is learning how to play the guitar. Okay? My son deserves to grow up and learn fully how to play the guitar. And that baby whose body part they took out of that rubble doesn't get that chance. And the only reason is because they were born over there.
Yep.
Not because that baby deserved that. Not because my son deserves to learn the guitar more than that, right? And when you hear that and you realize that, it makes you feel like I should be doing more than what I'm doing. I don't deserve any of this. I'm not. Everybody works hard. Everybody works hard. Everybody's smart. Everybody is creative. And everybody deserves a fair shot at everything, right? And not everybody gets it. And that's the thing that we push back against. You're with me here? Yeah. So, I recognize that there are levels to sacrifice. I recognize that there are levels to engagement. But to the people doing nothing, who are listening to this conversation today, who feel compelled to do something, I will speak for them. We are coming to you, our sister, to ask, second part, what more can we do?
Got heavy in here. We don't want to be forgotten.
Jesus.
And this war that isn't a war, this annihilation. You know, if you really thought that land was yours, you wouldn't destroy it. you wouldn't rip up 3,000-year-old olive trees. And there's videos of Palestinian women with their arms thrown around an olive tree because this is our livelihood. And it's a part of the land. And it's a part of us. If you really thought that that was yours, you wouldn't rip it up the way the Israelis do. So anyway, it's an annihilation of a land and our people. And it's tiring. Like, I don't want to talk to you about a man who held pieces of his children in two plastic bags. That's horrific. And it's exhausting to listen to. And you want to tune it out because we're not meant to take in all of this. It's too much. It's too much. I took a genocide and the Holocaust class in college and I cried every day that I left that class because it was too much and it never should have gotten to that point. And sometimes it's just easier to turn it off. I've never seen Schindler's List because I can't, because my heart, it would just rip. I can't. It's just too painful. I'm like, oh, I get the gist of it and that's enough. And I can't. So what we're asking is for you to not turn away and not look away and not get tired of us, because this affects the whole world. It really, really does. I'm not saying this because I'm a Palestinian. I'm saying this because I know, because I've seen it and I've lived it and I've experienced it and I've watched the political theater that happens around it. What happens in Palestine affects all of us. And if I can't pull at your heartstring from human to human and say, please don't forget about us, we matter, then I would pull at your heartstrings because this affects you and your children. You have to keep talking about it. They're banning TikTok or trying to because our voices matter. Sharing stories actually works. Elevating the voices of Palestinians on the ground, not mine, the ones on the ground, the journalists or the young people who've turned into journalists, who are being targeted by Israel for their voices. They've killed, I think, 120 journalists the last time I counted, because they're afraid of our voices. And so we need the international community to elevate the voices of the people on the ground and make sure that they are heard everywhere. So that's a really big one. Boycotting is a really big one. And you can follow the Palestinian boycott movement. It's called BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions. And it's really easy. We're like, hey, don't spend your money at these crap food chains. And it makes a difference. People are starting to notice because your dollar is your vote. And now we've been able to share the truth. The narrative has switched into the truth. So we have to keep that elevated and not let it get smothered. And then we also take our finances. We vote with our dollar. And that scares governments because governments are corporations. And if we can stifle that together, I think that that can do a lot of good. And it makes, that's how we as the people find power.
Okay. I want to add something here before we switch to the other part of the question. It's funny. I've heard about the worst pain that a person can endure. And once upon a time, I heard that the worst pain that a person can endure is childbirth. And then I heard, I don't know, passing a kidney stone is worse, right?
It's the argument. Which one's worse?
And then I heard, no, getting cheated on is the worst. And then I witnessed a woman watch her mother forget who she was. Mm. And she told me that being forgotten.
Wow.
So I remember that conversation. And I realized, yep, that's the worst one.
So painful.
So, you know, I'm not going to forget you.
Thank you.
And I'm not going to let anybody else forget you. I have a microphone in an audience. I still got my bracelet, my Free Palestine bracelet. And again, I want to remind folks that this is in no way a condemnation of Jewish people. I love Jewish people. I have since day one, will until my last day.
Shame on the Israeli government. Shame on them. Stuff
in the name of Jewish
people. For appropriating a people's faith and using it against the whole world.
And to be fair, I am a journalist. And as I mentioned in the beginning of our talks that we've been having, that I do have a standing offer with Ami Horowitz, who is a pro-Israeli correspondent, to come onto the show and say his piece. I would be very critical of his positions, admittedly. I will admit my bias. I've done the research, and what has been verified and validated and checked out certainly supports my opinion in this matter. But, you know, far be it for me to only highlight one side, but I will say to you, my sister, that I will not forget you. That, you deserve happiness, not the worst pain. And your people, I believe, they've been through enough pain, so.
This concludes part 3 of our 4-part special with Palestinian American, human rights major, and former Miss Arab USA, Suzanne Aslam. Check back in with us tomorrow for part 3 right here on the Black Information Network Daily Podcast with me, your host, Ramses Ja.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
Well, how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.